Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to King Jordan Radio for Tuesday, May the 7th, 2013. Ladies and gentlemen, before I proceed, I want to thank the thousands and thousands of listeners that tuned in to last night's Tom Mesereau interview. And I want to give a happy birthday to the late, great Owen Hart. Here to join us tonight, the Wrestling Insider. Let's bring him into the conversation. JJ will join us. JJ, hello.
What's up, King? As you mentioned, Twitter was ablaze. A lot of wrestlers, a lot of wrestling fans paying respect to the King of Hearts. Today marks Owen Hart's birthday. He's still remembered and never forgotten.
Absolutely, and we'll play a clip of that in a second. Let's also bring in from the Chicago Sun-Times photographer that shoots ringside, my friend Blackjack Brown. Blackjack, good evening.
Hey, King.
How you doing, buddy?
JJ, how's it going, buddy?
Brother Blackjack, what's up, my friend?
Not much.
All right, JJ, I did not see a piece of Raw last night at all. What were some of the highlights?
Well, you know, Raw was pretty interesting. You know, the show started off with, you know, Cena and Vicky Guerrero, and they were talking about their match at Extreme Rules. Extreme Rules, as of right now, has about three matches signed. You have the WWE Championship, the World Championship, and, of course, the match between Brock Lesnar and Triple H. Some highlights of the show, you know, there was a pretty decent match between Del Rio and Ziggler, in which Ricardo Rodriguez, AJ, and Langston were all there to back up their men. And Swagger interfered in the match. And we saw Shield, who continues their dominance in the WWE. They're undefeated as a group. They took on the Usos and Kofi Kingston. We saw Antonio Cesaro take on Zack Ryder in a pretty much a squash match. But Cesaro's been doing really great. A lot of people are still talking about his match that he had with Kofi Kingston last week. It was probably one of the better matches that Main Event has had since it's been back on the air.
And when is Extreme Rules?
I don't have the date in front of me, but I believe we're just a few weeks away. Yeah, it's this month in May.
Okay. So you got that. And Black Jake, as we record this live, of course, the Jody Arias trial is still deliberating. Let me see if I can get the clock. 12 hours, 53 minutes, 30 seconds right now. Very long time for a trial to be deliberating so long. Conrad Murray, 9 hours. Casey Anthony, 11 hours. Scott Peterson, 8 hours. So this one's pretty long. Bachjack, of course, predicted that she would be fully acquitted. And we have a little side bet on that. And Blackjack, do you still stand to that? With that?
Yeah, the being so long, there's just so many aspects of it being a case that is not even, I don't know how to, like a soap opera, like, you know, just the way it's portrayed, like, you know. I mean, I'm sure this guy. It was a thing of between life and death between two people, and people get crazy on different things like that. That's what I believe. You know, everyone's entitled to their own opinion with these things, you know. I just think it was outrageous of their sex life, the way it was portrayed and what she did. And I mean, some guys look for stuff like that, you know, and vice versa, you know.
Yeah, I don't want to get too much off the trial, off the topic and get to the wrestling show, but definitely we will have some kind of attorney this week, maybe even tomorrow, we'll see. That's the story. As you know, this is a sports media show, so you have everything here. when I first started, and Blackjack named me King Jordan, as I told anybody that asked. Blackjack, you remember naming me back in 1996?
I'll never forget it.
And Blackjack has named not just me, but he has named some active wrestlers in the business. Isn't that right?
Wow.
Oh, definitely.
And
so finally came down to The Rock. And he wanted to even keep that name all the way and try to get the name back from WWE.
No question. You know, a tragedy occurred this month in 1999. That is not the date. We'll do something special for that day. But Owen Hart, can you believe, would only have been 48 today had he had lived. 48, that's pretty young to even die now, let alone
yeah.
back then when he was, I believe, 36, 37. So sad.
Very
what
sad.
I want to do right now is play a funny clip with Owen Hart and Steve Austin.
Owen Hart!
Let's take you back to SummerSlam. The Tombstone Piledriver applied by Owen Hart on Stone Cold Steve Austin. Left Austin, look at that, temporarily paralyzed. You see Austin's head exposed there. Owen Hart very proud that he broke Steve Austin's neck.
What is the matter with you? Why would you wear a t-shirt like this, Owen 316, and on the back, I just broke your neck, when you know that lunatic is here tonight? What's the matter with you?
Austin talks a good game, but Owen gets the job done. Look at him.
I speak the truth. Just read it and weep because it's true, and I'll do it again.
Let's talk about the Intercontinental Tournament. This Sunday, you and Farooq in the ring. One of you walks out as the Intercontinental Champion. If in fact it's you, it won't be for the first time.
No, it won't be. And let's face it. Farooq, you're a great wrestler. But I'm very confident. I'm a better wrestler than you. I could wrestle you with my hands tied behind my back. And the only reason that I don't have the Intercontinental belt is because of myself. I made my own stupid mistake. I had compassion, and I lost my title to Stone Cold Steve Austin. I had him beat. He had a broken neck. He was a paraplegic lying there in the ring. But that mistake will never happen again. And a bad blood, Farooq, I will beat you, and I will become the Intercontinental Champion again, as I always should be.
Oh, it's pretty brave now that he's got that restraining order on
Austin.
I've
got something to talk to you about that's really bugging me. Now, we all know what kind of a lunatic Stone Cold Steve Austin is, how he's wreaked havoc, how he's run rampant here in the World Wrestling Federation. We all know what he's tried to do to me, tried to ruin my life. I'm a family man, a compassionate man, and he's ruining me my life. He's scaring the hell out of me, and I don't need it. So, Farooq, when I wrestle you, I will beat you as long as I get a fair shake and as long as Stone Cold Steve Austin is nowhere around. I've had security all around, and he's broken my security. Come in there, gave me a stunner, and look what he did to you. Vince McMahon yourself, look what he's done to you. He gave you a stunner. He gave it to Sergeant Slaughter. He's wreaking havoc in the World Wrestling Federation. And it's up to you to make a decision to get him the hell out of the World Wrestling Federation where he belongs. Because he's going to destroy it. An empire that not you, but your father started. How could you let him come in and destroy what not only you, but your father started? Don't let him do it, Vince. I know deep in your heart you will make the right decision. I know deep down in my heart that you will not let Stone Cold Steve Austin remain in the World Wrestling Federation. I know these fans all around, they don't want Stone Cold Steve Austin in the World Wrestling Federation. And it's up to you to make the right decision. Get him the hell out of the World Wrestling Federation. And I'd like to end this by saying, I can't wait till bad blood, because I will leave the Intercontinental Champion. And the next night, you will make the right decision and get Stone Cold Steve Austin out of the WWF.
Sounds to me like Owen Hart's got a case of the limber tail.
Ladies and gentlemen, there he is.
Exactly right.
The next Intercontinental Champion.
Owen Hart.
What a battle this Sunday between Farouk and Owen Hart in St. Louis for the Intercontinental.
Up good memories.
Yeah.
I believe that was in 1998, 1997. JJ, what comes to mind when you hear that?
Oh, you know, when I think of Owen, I think that just goes to show you, especially the Attitude Era. I don't know if many guys today would be wearing a shirt that said, "I just broke your neck." I think back then you had to be tough, you had to be a badass, and Owen was a funny guy, and he took it to the limits, man. His match with Stone Cold Steve Austin, which he did break his neck with an inverted pile driver. It was brutal. Austin finished the match, and it was just amazing. But, you know, Owen was much more than that moment. Owen had some great matches with his brother Brett. I was very fortunate that I got to see Owen and Brett wrestle in Chicago. In fact, WWE.com lists their 50 greatest WWE championship matches, and the 12th match on that list was Owen versus Brett, the WWE Championship in 1994 at SummerSlam. And it was at the United Center. The whole Hart family was there. It was in a cage match, and it was an awesome match, and I will always remember that match. And, you know, the 1994 King of the Ring winner, Owen was a two-time Intercontinental Champion. He was a European Champion and a four-time Tag Team Champion with, you know, Yokozuna, Jeff Jarrett, and his brother-in-law, Jim Neidhart, and the British Bulldog. Oh, God, you know, we miss Owen. I really wish, you know, he could still be around today and we could saw so many matches, maybe him and, you know, Chris Jericho. There's so many things we just never got to witness, and it's a shame.
Blackjack, your thoughts on the late, great Owen Hart and that promo brings you back?
Brings back great memories. He was a good friend. I knew all the Harts, and once he came into the New York area, you know, we hit it off pretty good. He was a real good guy, real fun guy. He always played a lot of goofs and pranks on different things. That's why I remember him the most. He was a real fun guy to hang around with.
Oh, yeah.
What was your most memorable moment with Owen Hart?
Him against Brett.
At WrestleMania?
Yes.
You know, to me, in 1997, when they reformed the Hart Foundation with Brian Pillman, Jim the Anvil, Neidhart, Bret Hart, the Bulldog, and who else is in that? Yeah, that's it. And
Brian Pillman?
Brian Pillman, you know, you got to see Owen at his best. You know, they were together. They were on top of the company. They were feuding. They were feuding with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was almost JJ like USA versus Canada.
It was in effect. Very international feeling because back then when Brett was about to leave the company. And the funny thing about Brett is even when he was a bad guy, in some ways, he never really crapped on at least his fans. The Canadians loved Brett. They treated him like a national hero. They loved Brett. They loved the Hart Foundation. You would never hear Brett say a bad word about any of the Canadians. So even if he was hated in America and people were cheering for Shawn Michaels or Stone Cold Steve Austin, in Canada, the Hart Foundation ruled.
And, of course, he said many years later that he really wasn't comfortable with that, because he loved Canada and he loved America. Isn't that right, Black Jack?
Most definitely.
And on the back on the topic of Owen Hart, you talk about people who deserve the title. Would you guys both agree that Owen Hart should have got a run with the World Heavyweight title?
Yeah, okay. There were just certain things that prevented it. There would have been a time in his life to gain that world title.
Absolutely. I think maybe he might have even been getting towards it after he would have been done with that Blue Blazer gimmick. I think he was really getting into a groove there. He was getting popular. Fans were really getting behind him. He was kind of getting in a new direction. He was always kind of Owen Hart, the bad guy. People always wanted to boo him. He was jealous of Brett, but then Brett was gone. And when Brett was gone, he wasn't in Brett's shadow anymore. He was his own man. Like I said, he created the Blue Blazer gimmick, and I think the fans were really kind of getting behind him. It was a really fun thing, and they enjoyed that kind of superhero aspect. And I think he could have, you know, depending if he would have survived, if he would have lived, you know, I think he could have got a WWE title run. I think it definitely could have happened, but, you know, unfortunately, we'll never know.
Yeah, and I believe it was May 19th or 20th, something like that. Do you know, JJ?
Yes, I believe it was somewhere around that. It was later in the month. It was at that Over the Edge pay-per-view, and I don't know if it was the 23rd or, like you said, the 20th. Towards the end of the month, it was just, it was a heartbreaker. You know, so many times we go, you know, a friend tells us, or we go on the internet, or you watch Monday Night Raw, and they had the In Memory of. But the thing that was so bizarre and so just heart-wrenching was that this was happening live on television. We were watching it as it was happening. I mean, there are no words to describe that. It was heartbreaking. It was very sad.
No, it was totally sad. I was on the phone with Eric Sims, as you know, Blackjack, and he was telling me that this has happened, and, you know, knowing Eric as we do, Blackjack, I thought it was a joke, and quite honestly, I was hoping it was a joke.
Yeah, we witnessed history in the making, you know, certain things in life. You know, you witness, there were some shocking things sometimes, and I guess we were a part of that to actually witness certain things like that.
And, of course, when I get that date of Owen Hart, we will have a one-hour special. Of course, you guys are invited to be on that show. We'll be paid sole tribute to Owen the Great Hart. Now, earlier in the program, we were talking about wrestlers who should have had a W championship run. Well, I got a clip from PVTrack.com, and let's hear some of their guys. We'll come back. We'll discuss it on the other side. Here we go.
You also think of the names of men who never were WWE champion, but perhaps should have been champion. Or in some cases, almost were. You know, the story of Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, supposed to be winning the championship at WrestleMania 4. And obviously that did not happen. Honky Tonk Man didn't want to drop the Intercontinental title to Randy Savage on that same main event show I just mentioned a few minutes ago that had the Hogan-Andre match. I guess the original idea had been for Savage to win the Intercontinental title back from Honky Tonk Man on that show, who had since beaten Steamboat, who was the person who beat Savage at WrestleMania 3. So just so you understand the whole chain of events here. And in the end, it was Randy Savage who ended up becoming the WWE champion instead, and that worked out tremendously well. Probably worked out a lot better than it would have even with DiBiase as champion. DiBiase was just a victim of either politics or timing or circumstances or whatever, but DiBiase could have been champion, never was. Rowdy Roddy Piper could have easily been one of the greatest heel champions of all time. As a wrestler, he was okay, he was good, but it wasn't about his wrestling ability, it was about his ability to talk shit and talk smack to people, which Piper was the very best at in his day, and probably one of the best of all time if you made a whole list of top talkers. If he wasn't number one, I think Piper would be in the top 10, probably the top 5. You know, Piper as the heel champion with Hogan chasing him would have been huge, but Hogan was already champion. I guess it didn't make sense to take the title off him at the time. They did a whole bunch of Hogan Piper matches. They were both in the WrestleMania 1 main event. It just never happened for Piper. Ravishing Rick Rude is another name I don't think gets raised often enough. The more I think about Rude, I think Rude could have had a run as WWE champion. Again, the timing, I guess, just didn't work, because in order for Rude to be the champion, I guess you could have done Hogan Rude in 89, and then when Warrior won the title, that would have been another chance to put the belt on Rude. He did have a title shot against the Ultimate Warrior and didn't win. But, they could have done something like that, maybe, where Rude, who already had one fluke win over Warrior at WrestleMania 5, beat him for the Intercontinental title. Maybe they could have done a story where Rude also beat him in a similar fashion and became WWE champion and let Warrior chase Rude for a few months and get the belt back. I just feel like, again, the timing just wasn't right, because it was very hard to break through to that level, way more hard, it seems, back then than it is today. There were only a very, very select few people that were in that class of being the champion or having a serious shot at becoming the champion back then. I mean, I guess they just didn't look at Rude that way. And Rude was not as big and as jacked up as a lot of those guys were. Savage wasn't either, although I'm sure Savage was jacked up himself. But I don't buy that argument, because Savage was never the biggest guy, and he was champion. And, of course, Bret Hart came along later on. Bret was never the biggest guy, and they made him the champion. Although by that point, Rude was long gone from WWE. But Rude always had a tremendous physique. It didn't matter to me. You would think it didn't matter that the guy wasn't 300 pounds. The guy was ripped to shreds. He looked phenomenal. I wasn't going to use the word ravishing, because that would have been too corny. But Rick Rude, I think, could have easily been a WWE champion, a heel that somebody chased after. He did have a chance to be champion in WCW later on. Mr. Perfect is another interesting name. I am a Mr. Perfect fan. I'm a big fan of Kurt Hennig's work. I consider him to be one of my favorite people to hold the Intercontinental title. I can go either way on Perfect. I can understand the argument that Perfect wasn't quite at that level, but you know what? Perfect held the AWA title. Perfect was the Intercontinental champion. They obviously saw him, in a certain light. He was a very good worker. He could bump around like nobody's business back then, one of the best at that. And I could see Mr. Perfect as a WWE champion. Maybe not a long reign, but Perfect wins the title and then gets beaten for it by Hogan or somebody. But again, the issue is, how do you get the title on a guy like Perfect? At his peak, the men who were WWE champion when Mr. Perfect was at his peak, arguably, in WWE, were Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. So do you have Perfect beat them in a match and then have them chase Perfect for the title? It was just a different time. Because Perfect also, I'm sure if I ever met Mr. Perfect, which I never had the chance to do, I wouldn't probably call him a small man, but he was a small man compared to the monsters that you had on the roster back then, so it was never going to happen. But I think he could have had a run. I think he could have filled that role very, very nicely. And here's another name for you, Vader. When Vader came to WWF in 1996, he was a monster. My favorite incarnation of Vader was in the early 90s. WCW, and he was WCW champion many times over, had a tremendous feud with Sting. He and Sting had some really great matches, some of the best matches, probably next to the Flair ones, that Sting ever had in his whole career, were with Big Van Vader. So when Vader first came over to WWF, you remember in the Royal Rumble, 96, he got dumped out, came back in, destroyed everybody, threw Shawn Michaels out, threw all these people out, even though he had already been eliminated. The very next night on Raw, his very first television appearance on Raw. I think he beat Savio Vega in a squash. But then they did the angle with Gorilla Monsoon, who was the president of the WWF at the time, and he beat up Monsoon in one of the best angles in Raw history to this day. You find the footage of that angle. It's a really well-done angle. So at first, they booked Vader to be this reckless, unstoppable monster, and it looked like, okay, give it a few months, 6 months, this guy's going to be champion. I could see Vader being champion with Shawn Michaels chasing him. And there's been a lot of rumors that Vader was supposed to win the title at SummerSlam 96, other rumors that say it was never supposed to happen. I believe Jim Cornette, who managed Vader at the time and did work for WWE, so, not that Jim Cornette wouldn't lie about anything, but he did work for the company, and he said that Vader was supposed to win the championship at some point. I don't know if that would have been SummerSlam or Survivor Series. The plan was always for Shawn to lose the title to somebody at Survivor Series, and according to Cornette, the spot should have been Vader, was supposed to be Vader, and ended up going to Sid instead. with the idea that whoever beat Shawn at Madison Square Garden would then lose the belt back to Shawn in his hometown of San Antonio at the Royal Rumble. So there's one person at least on record as saying Vader was scheduled to be the WWE champion and was not. And him losing to Shawn at SummerSlam that year, I think, hurt him quite a bit. I think if you were going to pull the trigger, not even Survivor Series, I think if you were going to pull the trigger, the time to pull that trigger would have been at SummerSlam, in my opinion. And they didn't do it. And the booking of Vader from that point on into 97, and, I mean, by 98, the guy was just a glorified jobber. They literally had Vader coming out on television calling himself a fat piece of shit. So the de-evolution of Vader on WWE programming was very obvious if you paid any attention. One other name I will throw out there that I don't see mentioned very often, but were he not injured in that horrific car wreck that ultimately, I think it's safe to say, probably led to his demise, probably from all the painkillers and stuff, were it not for him fucking up his ankle the way that he did, I think Brian Pillman in that loose cannon gimmick could have been a fine heel WWE champion. I think a Pillman-Austin title feud would have been phenomenal stuff. And I think it could have happened, too. Pillman, his whole character, everything, the character he was portraying, it was genius. You really thought this guy was a raving psycho. Of course, he wasn't. But he did a very good job of convincing people through what he did at ECW and when he first came over to WWF that this guy was a tad bit unstable. And before he was injured, Pillman was actually a hell of a wrestler. Remember the Flying Brian days in WCW? That guy could fly. He could go in there and have a great match. And with somebody like Steve Austin, who was on the ascent anyway, could you imagine the loose cannon character Brian Pillman during the Attitude Era in WWE feuding with Stone Cold Steve Austin? That would have made for some amazing television in the late 90s. And unfortunately, we were robbed of it. It was not to be. But those are the men I think of right off the bat when I think of guys who could have been WWE champion, perhaps should have been WWE champion, never had a shot. And it's a shame they didn't.
Okay, a lot of good names that he brings to life, JJ. What names do you agree with that should have been WWE champion?
Well, you know, normally I don't always agree with these guys, but in this case, I think they hit the nail on the head. I mean, as I was trying to make my list, they were just spewing out names left and right, and I went, yeah, you know, absolutely. Ted DiBiase. Why Ted DiBiase was never WWE champion, I'll never understand. I think he had a really great opportunity. I think we all remember that match he had with Randy Savage when the title was vacant.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, Rowdy Piper, as they mentioned, one of the greatest heels never to be WWE champion. I don't know what the circumstance was, but it's a shame that Rowdy Piper can never be called a world heavyweight champion in the WWE. I mean, Piper was a hell of a guy on the mic, his attitude, his persona. He was just a lightning bolt of just, hot rod. He was hot rod, man. He was great. As we mentioned before, Owen Hart, you know, it's a shame that he never really got to that place. You know, he had some great matches with Bret, but unfortunately, you know, it wasn't meant to be. You know, Rick Rude, Ricky Steamboat, gosh, there's so many
Ravishing
guys.
Yeah, Rick Rude, as you said, Brian Pillman.
Mr. Perfect, you know, Vader.
Mr. Perfect, I mean, if that was today, he'd definitely be a world champion.
No,
with all due respect to Sheamus's of the world and, you know, people like that. Blackjack, weigh in.
Do you remember Roddy Piper with the IC belt?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember Razor Ramon and Don Morocco and Ken Batella, Tito Santana?
That's right.
That's actually absolutely right. And
how about Johnny B. Bad?
Mark Merrow?
Yeah.
No.
I thought, I don't know.
He had the IC belt. Also, Goldust.
Yeah.
Chris Jericho.
Jericho.
There was a reason why they made IC
Jericho
title.
Was champ, Black Jack.
Say again?
Jericho was champ. He beat Steve Austin.
Don't
he beat Steve Austin. And who else? at the same time?
Yeah, he beat Chris Jericho beat Steve Austin for the WWE Championship the same night that he beat The Rock for the WCW Championship, and that's why he's the first ever undisputed champion. He won both belts.
But back to the guys, what about Ricky the Dragon Steamboat as far as the WWE title? He never was around for that.
It just goes according to their time and who's around and who they're going to push at the time. Everything with wrestling always depends on the markability, you know. And certain wrestlers just ranked, and some wrestlers didn't even really need a title.
Mm-hmm. No question. No question about it. And Vader, of course, never made it to the getting a title.
That was more due to his kind of scheduling as well. What helped him in the beginning was Harley Race, was managed by Harley Race. And it was according to the managers as well. Rick Rude had a good manager, and Bobby the Brain Heating.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Bobby the Brain Heating was one of a kind.
Oh, yeah, one of the all-time best.
Oh, no question. Okay, has The Rock wrestled his last match in the WWE? Let's take a listen to this clip.
Speaking of big names that may not be around anymore, that brings us to The Rock. The Rock has been in the news quite a bit of late. Rock did an interview with Peter Rosenberg of Hot 97 just to clear up some rumors about what happened the night after WrestleMania and talk about his future, or lack thereof, inside the ring. And Rock outright said, that might have been my last match. You know, the plan was for me to come back and do the honors with John Cena, and there really was no plan after that. And now that he got hurt, it obviously is a situation where he realizes, you know, do I have to come back? Do I want to come back and do this? And then he tweeted about it later on, and he answered a question from a fan, and he said, again, Mania may have been my last match. 3-year goal was to come in, elevate WWE, and then proudly do the honors. Now, do I think that Rock has wrestled his last match? No, absolutely not. I don't believe that for a second. But if the off chance is that he did in fact wrestle his last match, I'm happy for him. He had a plan. He came back. He was around for 3 years, right? Remember WrestleMania 27, he was the host. That was the first leg of the plan. And I don't want to lay it all at the feet of The Rock, because he's an entertaining guy, and it was obviously part of a bigger plan that, I mean, the next 2 years after WrestleMania 27, the company did bigger business for WrestleMania than they've ever done before. You know, the preliminary numbers just came out for this year's Mania show. $72 million made overall on this event, well over a million buys on pay-per-view. It's hard to argue that it was a bad plan, but WrestleMania 27 was probably among the worst. Overall of the WrestleMania show. Certainly, in terms of WrestleMania main event, it was the worst, in my opinion. But you had Rock on that show, you know, rock bottoming John Cena at the end, costing him the championship. Then came the first match, then came the second match. And there's no doubt, whatever you think about The Rock, and, you know, he went on some of those television shows and didn't mention WWE or have the belt with him, and then others he did. He brought a lot of attention and eyeballs, even if only temporarily, on the product. So yeah, maybe not all those people are going to continue to watch WWE now that he's gone. But you know what? They watched him for a time, and the numbers were huge. They sold out a ton of shows. I mean, there was a period of time for many years, up until recently, where WWE, they wouldn't sell out arenas anymore like they used to. And once WrestleMania season rolls around, generally speaking, people are more interested, but I mean, there's no doubt The Rock helped out a lot in terms of sellouts, in terms of tickets sold, in terms of pay-per-view buys. That's why you bring the guy in. He's a different kind of star. And if he wants to wrestle and he still loves this, what are you going to say, no? You're an idiot if you do that. So it was fun having Rock back, and I enjoyed, for the most part, I enjoyed his stuff. And if it is his last match, then he's got nothing to be ashamed of. You know, he came in, he did what he was going to do. Won the championship, and he put over the top star. Now, you know, could he have put somebody else over? Like he said in his interview, because Rosenberg asked him that question. He was kind of evasive on that in a way. It's not like he came to John Cena's defense. He basically said, look, he was the guy that the company wanted, so I did it. So the plan was to elevate Cena. Could it have been somebody else? Yeah, maybe it could have been. I don't know who that person would have been. Maybe CM Punk before he went heel? I don't know. But do I think Rock wrestled his last match? No. And Rock admitted in the interview the plan was for him to be on Raw that night at the Izod Center and do an angle where Brock Lesnar would lay him out, and that would set up either the main event or the co-main event, certainly, of WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans next year. Now that match is up in the air because Rock, I do believe Rock is just really not sure what he wants to do, and he's hurt right now. Who knows, you know, how long it'll take for him to fully heal. His mother was at the Cauliflower Alley Club ceremony a few weeks ago in Vegas and gave an interview to Arta Ocal and basically said that she hopes he does come back. Rock is still very close to his mother. I'm sure they talk quite a bit. I don't know if she said that she thinks he will, but she says, I hope he does. There's a lot of people that hope he comes back. And I hope he does too, because other than Brock Lesnar, let's say for some reason the match with Lesnar doesn't happen, or it does, and he wants to keep wrestling. There's three other really good opponents for him that I would love to see him in the ring with, one of which is Randy Orton, which, by the way, if they were to do a Rock-Randy Orton feud in the near future, obviously they're not, but if they did, that'd be a nice way to turn Randy Orton in the course of that feud. Chris Jericho is another name. That's a selfish name, I admit. Jericho is, you know, 40-something years old, and we've already seen Rock vs. Jericho before, but it's been over a decade since we've seen Rock vs. Jericho, and Jericho seems to have only gotten better with age. I wouldn't necessarily say the same thing about The Rock. He's just so much bigger and ripped than he used to be. He's not as quick. He may not be quite as good, but selfishly, I'd love to see a Rock-Jericho match. I just think it would be a lot of fun. And Dolph Ziggler, you know, and I give Dolph Ziggler a lot of praise. I'm not saying he's the end-all, be-all, but he's very good. And I think him working with a guy like The Rock could probably give Rock the best match he's had since he come back. I'm sure that a Rock-Ziggler match, in terms of an actual wrestling match, would be a hell of a lot better than Rock vs. Cena. But they'd all be really good matches I'd like to see. You know, but he already wrestled the biggest name on the WWE roster. It really was the biggest match they could have done. I don't care if you like John Cena or not. There's no bigger star in WWE full-time right now than John Cena. So they did the biggest match they could do. The first one, not the rematch. I wasn't really much of a fan of the rematch. But we'll see what happens. You know, Rock is going to be gone for a while. He'll think about it, and I'm sure when he's good and ready to make up his mind, he'll let Vince McMahon know, and that way the company will know whether or not we're going to be forging ahead with Rock and Brock next year, or if they have to find a different opponent for Brock Lesnar. Because that's another big question that's going to have to be answered very soon.
Okay,
let me take this, King.
Go ahead, Blackjack.
Okay, from what I can see at this present time, The Rock will probably come back, and what better way is to finally have that three-way match, Cena, Brock Lesnar, and The Rock in a three-way match, and they're going to, at this point in time, I could see them trying to bring Lesnar into a hell of a monster, destroying things, destroying the office, destroying Triple H once again, to make him one of the biggest heel, even bigger and better than Ryback, since I still think that Ryback...
Ryback, yeah? Blackjack.
I think we lost him.
I think we lost him. Okay, yeah, but yeah, we did lose him. JJ, what was your feelings on that? Maybe bringing The Rock back and then having him feud with Lesnar and possibly Cena?
Well, yesterday on Monday Night Raw, they had, of course, they're getting ready for Lesnar and Triple H, but while Lesnar was at the Stamford, Connecticut office, the headquarters of the WWE, Heyman and Lesnar were walking through the offices, and there was a big poster of The Rock. And Brock Lesnar looked at that poster, and he just grinned. And Paul Heyman goes, oh, look at that guy. So they kind of, that's their kind of way of slowly teasing, maybe, you know, Lesnar and Rock. You know, I really hope Rock comes back. Maybe we'll find out at the end of the year. It's my understanding that in October, the WWE will be having their annual Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view will be in Florida. Rock's hometown.
Oh, really?
So maybe The Rock will show up. I mean, it's his hometown. He don't have to go very far. But with his schedule with movies, we never know. Like they were saying, The Rock came in, and I'm glad he came back. You know, I think the WWE is better with The Rock. He has that presence. He brings in people. He is entertaining. He's funny. He can still wrestle, whether or not he's as good as he was in his prime in the Attitude Era. You know, I think that's relevant. I think the fact he goes in there, he wrestles, he looked good with Cena, he looked good with Punk, and I think he held his own when he was on television, and he was with Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes, and he's kind of insulting them and giving them the Rock bottom. I mean, the fans love it. You know, they're always happy when they see The Rock. You know, he just brings the people power back, and they're interested. As long as people are watching, that's a good thing. Hello.
Hello, mate.
Blackjack.
How are you?
What's up, man?
What's going on here?
I don't know. I think we got cut off.
Hey, did you get the column on Sunday?
Yeah, I got the column from Sunday.
Did you blog it out?
The encyclopedia. I got it right in front of me. Yeah.
Did you blog it out?
Well, I haven't posted it or anything, no.
Yeah, when you get that, send it to me. I'd love to see what you do to that. That guy Brian, too, would like to see how you do it.
All right, man. I'll try to get something done maybe tonight. I'll put something together.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you mentioned, too, about CM Punk and he's taking his extended leave.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got it in front of me. I just got to, you know, copy it and I'll put it on there.
Okay.
I'll send it
to you. And, JJ, I know you do those amazing pictures in Blackjack. You've seen them, right?
Yeah.
The pictures that JJ has done for the radio show.
It's awesome.
Totally amazing. Totally amazing. I'm looking to get everybody, including yourself, that has appeared on the show and put one big picture of that. I know it could take some time, but do you think you could be the man to do it?
Yeah, I think I could get, if you have a picture of everybody, I could definitely put them, you know, line them everybody up and put them in a shot. It'll be like, you know, a natural photo like I do for your other shows.
You won't have to go far. You just go down to the post office and grab one of the photos off the wall.
There you go. No, but seriously, do you remember the old World Rumble covers, you know, with Hogan and Warrior and Slaughter and... It was like in a cartoon way, but they were all together. Do you know how to do that?
Anything that's like animated, you know, computer graphics, cartoons, that's something I couldn't do. You know, I can, you know, take photos that we already got and piece it together.
Oh, that'd be great because we definitely need Blackjack Brown, Pearl Jr., Tom Mizero, Axel Rotten, Scotty Riggs, who, by the way, I don't know if you guys heard it. I think, Blackjack, you heard some of it. Totally great shoot interview, if you will. He was having a lot of fun. And what's his name from ECW called up, from the original ECW? Why can't I think of his name? Damn it. Who was Kelly Kelly going out with back there 6 years ago?
You're the only one that kept track of that kind of stuff.
Now, who is she dating?
What, Tess?
No, the beach before, after that, or before that, or one, somewhere around there. Jesus Christ. Okay, remember when they brought in the new ECW?
Yeah.
In 06? Mm-hmm. Okay, there was a big guy. And he really didn't look like a typical ECW wrestler. Jeez, I can't remember his name. Do you remember some of those guys? You had CM Punk.
Malone?
Who?
Slice Malone?
No, that's a movie.
Joe Bibbins, Rodney Eastgaven.
No. Damn it, Matt. No, not Matt Morgan. Somebody like that, you know. Jesus, he called into the show, but I guess I'm sorry. I'm just not good with names. It was definitely cool. If you go to Facebook, King Jordan Radio, press like, you could definitely get it on the archive. Scotty Riggs, and then, damn, what's his name? You guys are wrestling fans. You can't think of his name. Let's see. Okay, Kelly was his manager at the time.
Huh. In that new ECW.
In the new ECW on Tuesdays on Sci-Fi.
Well, I remember she was there for the... Oh, no, it wasn't Balls Mahoney.
No, nobody from the old ECW.
Yeah, I remember her with the Extreme Exposé. It was her and it was Miss Tessmacher and Layla. I remember them as a group together. But I can't remember who she was managing.
Wow. But in any event, after the Riggs interview, there's a good shot that I'm going to have Rob Van Dam on this show. How
wow.
effing cool would that be?
The whole effing show, yeah. I mean, RVD, one of the all-time greats in ECW. He had an amazing time in the WWE. He went in TNA, did some great stuff over there. Now he's a free agent, so definitely looking forward to hearing from Rob Van Dam.
And you know this show will get a high, high, high rating.
It does.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
On a special start time, 4:20.
Right. Okay, last week we were naming our top five wrestlers when we had Jeff on the show. And I said mine was Rob, Warrior, Rock, Hogan, and Steve Austin. And we were just doing this off the top of our head, I believe.
Yeah.
Blackjack, I know it will be your era goes back into the dinosaur era, so we might not be privileged to know. I'm just kidding. No, but in any event, who's one of your favorites? So I'll ask you like that.
Bruno Sammartino.
How do I know?
Wow.
What about Freddie Blassie?
Freddie Blassie. Killer Kowalski. Hulk Hogan. Rob Van Dam.
You know what's funny? And I'm not going to give away your age, but I'll just say you could have someone that's 40, 50, 60, 10, and right now, and they could all be fans of Hulk Hogan.
Yep.
Hulk Hogan appealed to every era.
Every era, every demographic. Yeah, I mean, Hulkamania. It's amazing how long it's still going. I don't want to say it ended because it never did. It's still going. Every new generation who's seen Hulk Hogan, whether he's in WCW, whether it's the glory days in the WWF, whether it was his return in the NWO and WWE, even now in TNA. I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised if you see him next year at WrestleMania.
Amen to that. I love TNA. Let me preface by saying this. But until he gets back to the WWE, had ended there, finally, the chapter is not over yet. And how about this for a scenario? Next year's WrestleMania, in one corner, the undefeated Undertaker. In the other corner, he must retire if he doesn't win, Hulk Hogan.
Wow.
What about that?
That would be something. I mean, the funny thing is they've actually faced each other before, but never at WrestleMania, never at the biggest pay-per-view event of the year, and especially WrestleMania 30, the anniversary show. Wow.
How about they both have a match, and at the end of it, they both have to retire?
Well, that's sort of like what happened with Brock Lesnar and Goldberg at WrestleMania 20. You know, it's funny. I was basically in fifth grade at that Survivor Series when they wrestled, and I believe The Undertaker got the belt for a few days, right? And then they had a Tuesday night in Texas. You remember that?
I know it existed.
How about you, JJ? Do you recall that?
Yeah, I remember, you know, Taker and Hogan. They're not as strange. You would might, you know, a lot of fans today might go, "Oh, well, Taker and Hogan, they've never faced each other." That's not true. They really did. In the early 90s, they faced each other. When Hogan came back and he was the undisputed champion, Taker was the one that ended his title reign.
No question. But if it's not Hulk Hogan, who would you see Undertaker taking on, JJ?
Oh, boy. Right now, I think the only people that are left is John Cena. John Cena versus the Dead Man. I mean, I don't know anyone else in the WWE who would be deserving, who maybe hasn't faced The Undertaker already. I'd say Randy Orton, but we've been there, done that. You know, John Cena, he's the only guy who's a top guy. As much as I like Dolph Ziggler, I don't see Dolph Ziggler versus The Undertaker. It's just not going to happen. I don't see, you know, Brock Lesnar. It's possible, but I don't really think that's a match Taker wants, and I don't really think that's a match Lesnar wants. You know, they had their match at No Mercy. It was a Hell in a Cell match. Brock won. Brock beat The Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match. We've been there. We've done that. Taker versus Cena, that would be huge, at least in the WWE. I mean, I would love for Sting to come, but unfortunately...
Well, you know, did they wrestle before at a pay-per-view?
Who?
Taker and Cena.
Yeah, I'm sure Taker and Cena have crossed paths before in Cena's early days in the WWE. In fact, when Cena was just starting out and he had his whole Thugonomics thing, he mentions The Undertaker in his song. He talks about being the new Dead Man Inc. So they had a very small program. Cena wasn't established yet. He was still on the rise. It didn't really go anywhere. But Cena of today is a whole different person.
Absolutely. Just want to touch on TNA. Haven't seen much of it. I know there's still feuds with the Aces of Eight. Is that what it's called? JJ, can you bring us up to date on what you know?
Well, on Impact last week, you know, they had this whole thing with Hulk Hogan and Sting. You know, Hogan was pissed at Sting because he trusted Sting, and Sting was the one who told Hogan that he should use Bully Ray to go and be, you know, the number one contender and to face Jeff Hardy, and then Bully Ray screwed everybody by being revealed as the leader of Aces and Eights. So then Hogan was kind of pissed at Sting. There was this whole situation where Hogan told Sting, just, you know, get out of here. I don't want to see you. I don't want to deal with you. And Sting was gone for a few weeks. Then Bully Ray corners Hulk Hogan. Sting comes back, and, of course, he helps out Hulk Hogan. And now they're going to have a match, I believe, next week. It's going to be Sting. Actually, I think it was last week it was Matt Morgan versus Sting, and the number one contendership to the TNA title, and Sting won. Sting is the number one contender. Sting will face Bully Ray at Slammiversary. We also got Chris Sabin. Chris Sabin, he was hurt. He had months. He twisted his knee up pretty bad, and he's been gone for about a year. He finally made his TNA return. He looked good. He's in great shape. Hopefully he stays healthy. You know, he's one of the TNA originals. So, you know, I got a lot of respect for Chris Sabin. You know, a lot of people love him. They want to see him get back and just do what he does best.
No question. And when is the pay-per-view?
Slammiversary is June 9th.
June 9th. Anything mentioned for that?
As far as it's in Boston, so, you know, it's, like I said, June 9th in Boston, Slammiversary. It's their third pay-per-view of the year. There's only one more after that, and that's Bound for Glory.
Is something going down in Chicago soon?
Not with TNA, no.
How about WWE?
WWE, yeah. WWE has a pay-per-view called Payback, and I think it's in, I think it's next month, June.
Okay.
Interesting, interesting, and we shall see what happens with that, of course. Okay, let's take a listen to this clip. Okay, we heard as The Rock, The Rock should Ryback feud with, okay, should Ryback feud with Chris Jericho. Here's their take, and we'll come back after the break, and we'll take ours.
Obviously, anytime there's an injury report, fake or real, that John Cena is hurt and may be out for an extended period of time, you have the bottom dwellers who come out and they post stuff like, oh, you know, this is great. This is great news. I already saw people on the SE Scoops thread on Facebook saying, a million likes. And I get what they're saying. They're obviously very sick of John Cena, and anytime John Cena goes away and somebody else steps up in his place is a positive thing in these people's eyes. I don't think most of these people mean ill will towards John Cena. Some do. Those are the bottom dwellers that I'm referring to. But the fact is, what do you do? If John Cena is hurt and can't go at the pay-per-view, does it put WWE in a bind? Not really. It doesn't have to. And in fact, I was just thinking about this before I started recording here. If John Cena is legitimately hurt and he cannot wrestle at the pay-per-view, and the pay-per-view is still many weeks away, so if it's not a full tear or a major injury, I could see him saying, listen, I'm going to be at the pay-per-view. Hold me out until then. I can wrestle. I'll be okay. It harkens back to the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view last year. If you remember, John Cena had an elbow injury, and there was talk that maybe he would wrestle. Either the company would try to, you know, force him to wrestle, or he would want to. But he had surgery. They cut it too close. He couldn't wrestle. They did the whole replacement deal, and instead it was CM Punk and Ryback. Could we have a repeat of that here, where the company rushes CM Punk back early to wrestle Ryback yet again for the championship in a pay-per-view main event because John Cena is hurt? I don't think so. Nor do I like that idea, because I like the idea of keeping CM Punk off television, or at the very least out of the ring as long as possible, even off TV completely, because I feel like it'll mean more when he comes back. You know, the dude obviously he's been on the road, balls to the wall, 434 days as champion. Sounds like he's pretty banged up and hurt right now. I say let him have time off to heal up, have fun, do whatever he wants. And if he comes back in July, if he comes back in August, it'll mean more once he's back. Plus, I think CM Punk is great as a heel. Way too early to turn him back into a babyface. I would not do that. So take CM Punk off the table. If John Cena is hurt and he can't wrestle, what do you do? Well, tomorrow, as I mentioned earlier, is the 50th anniversary of the WWE Championship, which happens to be a Monday night. I know WWE in the past has been averse to doing tournaments before. They do them here and there, but I get the impression they don't like doing tournaments very often. Maybe it's a Vince McMahon thing. I don't know. Why not have a tournament, a one-night tournament on Raw, to crown another number one contender, because Ryback is the number one contender, but crown another number one contender for the WWE Championship. The winner meeting Ryback for the vacant championship at Extreme Rules. So, yes. Take the title off John Cena. He can't wrestle. Let's say he can't wrestle. It's a legitimate injury. He's going to need quite a bit of time off. You vacate the championship. You have the winner of this tournament tomorrow night meet Ryback in the main event of the pay-per-view. Now, who do you put against Ryback? Who wins this tournament? The first name that popped into my head was Chris Jericho. And if you remember, Chris Jericho and Ryback was the rumored match for WrestleMania. In fact, Chris Jericho did an interview on the Observer website before WrestleMania, and he outright admitted that the plan was Chris Jericho against Ryback at WrestleMania, straight from the horse's mouth. That was going to be the match, and then plans changed, and Fandango became Vince McMahon's pet project, and he wanted Jericho in there with him, and they went with Henry and Ryback. So here's an opportunity to do the WrestleMania match that never was. Chris Jericho, certainly, I mean, look, Ryback is not awful or anything like that, but I think Ryback could go in there and probably have a pretty kick-ass match if he's in the ring with Chris Jericho. And Jericho doesn't have to win. In fact, Ryback wins. And finally, after all this time, Ryback gets his big win on pay-per-view, which has eluded him now for many months, and he gets to win the championship and carry the title for a little bit. Because if anybody has had a pretty far from sterling pay-per-view record over the last several months, and has been just beaten down and beaten down and beaten down. Even Mark Henry fell on his head. He got pinned at WrestleMania. It's Ryback. Now they've turned him heel. Now they want to turn him into an even bigger monster. you know, in that respect, he really shouldn't lose at Extreme Rules. And he could easily beat Jericho. Jericho doesn't lose anything for it. And when Cena comes back, now Cena is in the position of chasing for the championship, which I know he was doing that before WrestleMania, but let's be honest. It does kind of make more sense to have the babyface chasing the heel champion. Traditionally. That's typically how this works. If you have John Cena as the champion and he's facing this guy, he beats him. He faces this guy, he beats him. It's lacking that drama. In a way, it almost writes itself. So I don't think this is an awful situation for them to be in. If Cena goes away for a few weeks, not the worst thing in the world. They do a tournament. They have Jericho ride back to promote as a suitable replacement main event for the pay-per-view. If you don't want Jericho in there, fine. Put Randy Orton in there. Randy Orton hasn't exactly been booked as a main event level guy over the last few months. But I don't recall there being a Ryback Randy Orton match. Could be a good match. And again, Orton wouldn't win. So you can go with either one of those guys. But, again, color me skeptical about this whole, just the way the whole story on the website is phrased. I don't know how legit this really is. And maybe he is hurt, but it's really not all that bad. So they decided, okay, let's turn this into a storyline. I don't know. But that's just one idea that I if I were in the position of having to come up with a replacement idea and John Cena was out, that's the idea that I would go with. And I would give Ryback a shot. And when Cena comes back, he chases him for the title and he can win the championship back again. For his 11th reign or 12th, or I've lost track already. However many reigns he's had as champion. Doesn't even matter at this point.
Wow. JJ, let's go to you first. Just so it's what you just said.
You know, I like that. I like the idea of a tournament. I think they're right to a point. The WWE doesn't do too many tournaments, and that's a shame. The last time they did a tournament was when Punk left Money in the Bank and he beat Cena for the WWE title. They had no champion. So they did a tournament, and then they had Rey Mysterio win the tournament, and then he fought Cena, and then you had Cena versus Punk at SummerSlam. You know, you're not bringing Punk back. I love Punk, and it would be great to have him back. The guy's hurt. He's got whatever issues with the company. It's good for him to just keep him off television. I think that's good. Let him come back when he's a little better, and hopefully that'll be a bigger impact for him. Chris Jericho is your go-to guy. He can put anybody over. He's a great wrestler. He's just fun to watch. And I think of all the people in the WWE today, I think he's really the MVP of the WWE. I see him every week going out there having great matches, whether it's on television or pay-per-view, and he looks like he's having a blast. I'm glad that they haven't turned him into a heel because I like Chris Jericho, the good guy. I like Chris Jericho, the face. And I think he could really put Ryback over, and Ryback can still be the monster and face Chris Jericho. But as far as I know, according to yesterday, Cena Ryback last man standing match, that's what's scheduled for the Extreme Rules. So unless something changes, unless Cena gets hurt worse at house shows or if something happens at a live event, I don't see them pulling that match.
Blackjack, what do you say to that?
Cena's got to wrestle right at this point in time. The way it's going to go, they're up out of 10, and then they're going down. They're not going up. So I would imagine at this point in time that they're just going to keep things just the way it is until they bring back CM Punk. And when CM Punk comes back, he'll be a good guy, and he'll change the course of wrestling for the moment. So he's back and able to come back. CM Punk, don't rule him out.
And JJ, how long do you expect CM Punk to be out?
Well, they're saying that right now, you know, he's still banged up. We don't expect him to be back this month. But hopefully he'll be back in the summer. As Blackjack mentioned before, we have a pay-per-view in Chicago called Payback.
Yeah, he might show up there.
There's no greater place for the Windy City Saints to come back than to be come home to Chicago. And whether or not he wrestles or whether or not he just makes an appearance or he interferes in a match, I think we'll find out then if he comes back or not. If he doesn't come back in Chicago, then I would say he won't be back till maybe July, maybe around SummerSlam.
But do you have any of the matches that, before you do that, let me just read something. numbers continue to fall for WWE television programming, as this week's episode of Monday Night Raw fell below the 3-0 line as they went head-to-head against the NBA and the NHL playoffs. This Raw officially drew a 2.9. The number is down from last week's average of 4.3. For what it's worth, CM Punk continues to be absent from WWE television going into the month Extreme Rules pay-per-view, and Cena's participation in the program is limited at best due to a recent injury. This week's main event, that's tomorrow, featured Kane and Ryback going one-on-one for the first time. So there you have it, Kane and Ryback tomorrow on Eon, that's a local cable channel. That will be on tomorrow night, and the rating not so good, 2.9.
Yeah, and look for Ryback to destroy Kane.
Yeah.
Ryback to destroy Kane, you say?
Oh, yeah. Might as well.
Absolutely. So, JJ, how do you feel about this kind of events, the ratings being so poor?
Well, like I said, CM Punk was always the guy that you wanted to listen to. You know, whenever he spoke, you listened. Whenever he wrestled, your eyes were glued to the television. And with him gone, there's something missing. But then he's not the only one gone. The Rock, the People's Champion, Dwayne Johnson, he's out, he's hurt, he's kind of done right now. Whether or not he comes back, who knows. But as far as the regulars go, you've got two guys who aren't there. Who, you know, Rock was there building up WrestleMania. Punk was busting his ass each and every week. And now you got two top guys who are gone. So now you have to rely on John Cena, who you mentioned, may or may not, whether or not this is legit, I don't know, but they're playing it off that it is, that Cena's hurt. He's very limited in what he can do. He's wrestling tag matches. He's interfering in matches. It's hard for him to go out there because they're afraid, what if he gets hurt, and then they have to pull this main event. And then you've got Ryback, who you just turned heel, and now people are worried, what if he's not a great heel? What if he can't speak? What if his wrestling is poor? And the fact is, you know, I found it very strange that over the weekend, a lot of people were praising Ryback. They said, oh, Ryback had a great match with Daniel Bryan on SmackDown. Well, of course he had a great match with Daniel Bryan. He wrestled Daniel frickin' Bryan, who's one of the greatest wrestlers that the WWE has. He can make anybody look good. He can make Ryback look good. So, of course, Ryback had a great match with Daniel Bryan. You put Ryback in with John Cena, you put Ryback with The Miz, you might not get that great match.
No, I totally agree with you. And Scott Hall recently on Wade Keller's radio program had this to say about Triple H. I noticed something special about him the first time I saw him. Just the way he carries himself and his personality. Here's a guy who really, from a really stable family. Triple H's parents are still together, and I think that impacted the way he grew up because he's a real level-headed guy. So as far as the guy I would want to run the company, he would be the guy. He's a great representative of the company. When he goes out into the public, he's dedicated, a guy who doesn't drink or do drugs, and he never has. I think he can easily mix in a boardroom with a bunch of lawyers and accountant, and he's not out of his element. He's an educated and healthy guy, whereas in the kind of environment I would be looking for in the window, scratching my head, and then he laughs. Would I would want to be a part of the creative process? Yes. But do I want to sit in a meeting with guys that are still talking about merchandising, contacting, and licensing? Hell no, Scott Hall says. So it's high praise, Scott Hall, to his buddy Triple H. Your thoughts?
Oh, of course. You know, everybody knows the Click. You know, Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, X-Pac, Triple H, Shawn Michaels. You know, these guys are best friends, you know, on-screen, off-screen. We know that Triple H over the years, you know, they called him, he called himself the Game. And one aspect of the Game isn't just what you see on television, it's what happens off television, behind the scenes. And Triple H is one of those guys where he really is a student of the Game. He cares about what goes on behind the scenes, within those meetings with the representatives about merchandise and, you know, global and media and all this junk that, you know, is way above my head. I don't know if I'd want to do that, but Triple H does. He loves the business that much. And, you know, he's the future of the WWE.
Yeah. No question about it. And you agree, Blackjack?
100%.
Okay. Is WWE dropping the ball with Fandango? Take a listen to this clip.
Segment tonight. The fuck is WWE doing with Fandango? WWE, you know, it's funny because WWE is showing these video clips on YouTube, WWE.com. Oh, Fang going, Fangomania, Fang this, Fang my balls. Let me, they're going to come. Why don't they come out with fangs? You know what? Hey, we're wearing fangs to support Fandango. Fangs. I'm saying it stupidly. But they're putting all these videos up. Oh, Fandango Mania is running wild. Everybody's lifting up their fingers. I don't know what the fuck. I'm doing it right now. I have my second finger. I don't know what that second pointy finger is, you know, the one next to the thumb. I have them right now like the Bushwhackers, lifting them up in the air one at a time, you know. And I'm saying to myself, I'm sorry. When I think of Fandango's music, I don't picture myself lifting fingers in the air like this. I feel like a retard doing that. But they're showing all these videos of Fandango Mania running wild. And what do they do tonight? Yes, Fandango's a heel. We know that. But you could see how WWE is forcing the fans to boo Fandango. Now, I got news for you people. I do not believe it is the right time to turn Fandango face. Number one, we don't even know what the fuck the guy's got other than a WrestleMania match with Jericho, which was good. All right, he's new to WWE Universe. Not only that, what I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, are the fans, is it really Fandango Mania, the wrestler, or is it Fandango Mania, the theme song? And some people are starting to say, you know, that theme song's starting to get a little bit irritating. And I have a feeling that you give it another month, Fandango Mania is going to be, oh, it was just a tiny little phase, kind of like Zack Ryder when he first came out with those YouTube things, all right? And then what happens tonight? As much as I praised that crowd for what they did in the beginning for Cena and the kids, I applauded the crowd for doing that. I give you a big middle finger as well. You do this dance-off. And you got Khali doing nothing. It's funny, after Khali won, he did more dancing than he did during the dance contest. This fucking guy, I mean, look, of course, you know, the whole idea was for WWE to make Khali win and then have Fandango be the heel that he is and attack Khali and hurt him and everything. But, you know, Khali did absolutely nothing. And you think this crowd, after seeing the night after Raw, on how the crowd was so energetic and so, not, you don't have to be anti-establishment. You don't have to be anti-good guy. You don't have to be anything like that. But you know what? You express yourself and not go like sheep in a certain direction. You know, you speak up your mind. And what happened tonight? All the kids and a couple of guys, you know, adults and girls, they're all chanting for Khali. Yeah, you danced great tonight, Khali. Let's give him applause. What the fuck is anybody applauding this fucking Punjabi prick for? He didn't do nothing. And what happens? Fandango, because he's the heel, the crowd goes along with it and boos him and just totally, like, lets the air out of the Fandango balloon just a little bit more. And like I said, the whole segment was stupid. It was designed for Khali to win. But, you know, you would think this motherfucker would at least do a couple of dance moves and maybe have a moment like, holy shit, I didn't know Khali could actually dance. When you do dance-offs, featuring heels. Remember the Vicky Guerrero one when she was doing Elaine Benes? All right. The heel is supposed to be the one that dances like shit. And the face is supposed to be one that shows the moves. And what happened tonight? The absolute opposite. Punjabi prick does absolutely nothing. And the crowd. Yay! Yay! Let that air out of the balloon more, motherfuckers, because that's basically what's happening. And you know what? I have no problem with it. Because what's happening is that Fandango mania is starting to drift away, and it's drifting away fast. And give it a month, and people, unless WWE does something majorly different with this guy, you know, this Fandango mania is going to fizzle quicker than a bottle of seltzer with the cap wide open on 110 degrees. I don't even know if that makes sense. It's just because I have seltzer on my desk right now. So anyway, also, I like I said, I only had about 7 minutes notice tonight. And, you know, I had plans on debating Kev with a few things. But, you know, since we did a little bit of reminiscing tonight with Breakfast with Blasi. By the way, yes, this is the Don, Tony, and Kevin Castle show, but it's also a special edition of Breakfast with Blasi because I am doing a solo show tonight. And for the newer listeners that never heard an episode of Breakfast with Blasi, basically, it's plain and simple. Sometimes when I do the show with Kev, I don't get all my points out. A lot of times because I forget. Sometimes because, you know, when we debate, it could drag along a little bit. And sometimes people are like, you know what, why don't you do a solo episode so you could vent and you could say whatever the fuck you want. Nobody interrupts you and you could get your points across and do a solo show. And what happened was one time I was in my house watching TV and one of my favorite wrestling films was on cable. And it's called, wow, I almost forgot the name of it, Breakfast with Blasi. And if some people out there has never seen it, it features Andy Kaufman and Classy Freddie Blasi. God rest both their souls. And it's a funny, strange film. I would say it's around 90, it's got to be early 80s, I would say, you know, but Classy Freddie Blasi and Andy Kaufman, Breakfast with Blasi. B-L-A-S-S-I-E. Well, my name is De Blasi. So I was like, you know what? Hey, what if I tweak it a little bit and do Breakfast with Blasi as a tribute to Breakfast with Blasi? So that's where the name came from. So that's basically what I was doing. And I was doing an episode, I would say, every couple of weeks. But, you know, with everything with Hurricane Sandy happening over here and my parents' house getting completely leveled and me losing half of my stuff, wrestling has not been on the brain that much lately. So I just don't have enough material to do Breakfast with Blasi on a regular basis. I plan on doing it again, and I plan on doing it more often than people think. But that's basically the history of how Breakfast with Blasi formed.
Okay, besides Breakfast with Blasi, what were the points that you took out of the Fandango thing, JJ? Did he make some valid points?
Unfortunately, I have to agree that the WWE, I'm not really sure if they noticed something happened the night after WrestleMania. Everybody did. Anybody watching that Raw, we all saw something special. The fans went nuts. They just started singing the song. They were just having a great time. It was awesome. The following week, you know, it kind of died down a little bit. Then they went overseas to the United Kingdom. The United Kingdom fans, they were into it again. They were doing the song. They're having a great time with it. And then they're back in the States. And now the fans are, you know, you have the kids are doing it. You got, you know, a few fans are doing it, you know, adults. But then you watch Fandango, and I don't know what the hell they're doing with them. This guy, the way they were promoting him, is this next big thing, and you know he's sweeping the nation, and they put him in these situations where he's just bombing, and he's just tanking, and it's unfortunate because I want to see this guy succeed. I don't want to see him become the WWE champion tomorrow, but you know you give him the United States title, the Intercontinental title, just you know he's stepping his way up, he's getting popular, and I feel like they're just killing his popularity. And the fans, you know, they don't know really what to do. He's a bad guy. He's constantly insulting the fans. It's like they want to have fun. They want to embrace this guy, and he's in these really bad segments. His matches are, you know, okay. He had a good match with William Regal. He had a match with, you know, of course, the one at WrestleMania, which was probably his best match to date. He had some interference with Chris Jericho. And now next week, we're going to have another dance contest between Fandango and Chris Jericho. What's going to happen there? And I'm not sure I want to. I can't imagine WWE doing another sort of dance program, and it's probably not going to do well. I hope Chris Jericho, who's a very entertaining guy, very fun guy, he can actually make the segment worth watching. Because I don't think Fandango can.
Yeah, and just for the record, how many pay-per-views does the WWE have for the year?
I believe they do, I think, either 12 or 13.
Yeah, I think so, in that area.
Yeah.
Well, unbelievable. Of course, again, let me just remind everybody, today is the birthday of the late, great Owen Hart. Here's a little more of his theme. Actually, let me play a clip from Bret Hart talking about Owen Hart's death. But remember, we're going to have one special show on that date when I find out. After this clip, I'll tell you when the special will be. Take a listen to Bret Hart on Owen Hart's death.
Here in Kansas City, tragedy befell the World Wrestling Federation and all of us. Owen Hart was set to make an entrance from the ceiling, and he fell from the ceiling. And I have the unfortunate responsibility to let everyone know that Owen Hart has died. Owen Hart has tragically died from that accident here tonight.
I don't beat myself over the head with it, but I've always wished that I'd been with this company when Owen's accident happened. I've always felt a deep sense of loss and agonized over the what about the fact that I wasn't there to always be there for him like I had been for so many years, always looking over his shoulder.
On behalf of my whole family and everybody back in Calgary, we want to thank all the wrestling fans all around the world that have sent their love and their support and their condolences. It's meant a lot to myself. It's meant a lot to my family. And it was very, very much appreciated.
In this business, I guess you got a lot of acquaintances, but very few friends. And Owen, he was one of those friends. Owen was the nicest, funniest person I think that I've ever met, and he loved his family, and I think that they should know that he talked about them warmly and with love and affection, and I think there's probably a special place in heaven for Owen Hart, and I, like all the other guys, miss him, and we loved him.
The McMahon Hart family goes back so many years, and Owen, you'll be truly missed.
There's a lot of fans that did get to know him, and a lot of the wrestlers got to know him. And I don't think there's anybody that could say a bad thing about him anywhere.
To me, Owen was a type of guru to me. He helped me on the road when it came to traveling or a match. But the thing I remember most about Owen Hart is his ability to make me and anyone else laugh.
And when I think of Owen, I smile.
He was my closest brother. We never had an argument. We never raised our voices with each other once. We were friends. We were close from the time that he was in diapers. And I take a lot of... pride in knowing how well he had turned out.
Back in the month of May of this year, in this same facility in the Kemper Arena, the tragic accident that took the life of Owen Hart happened. We all knew going into this venue that it was coming on the horizon in October that we would be in the same building, how Bret Hart would react coming back to this venue. But Bret Hart has stepped up to WCW and said, here's what I want to do. I want to have a match. He asked WCW to have this match, not against anyone, but against the very close friend of the Hart family, Chris Benoit.
When I showed up at the arena that day, just being in the arena, being there, watching Bret walk around, looking up.
Kansas City was a really important, as important as any night I ever had in my life, let alone wrestling.
It was extremely emotional wrestling Bret Hart at Kemper Arena when we did the Owen Hart tribute match.
No. He's going for a criminal crossface and the sharpshooter. Look at
him. I really believe or felt that Owen was right there above the ring watching. And in a lot of ways, it was a match for one person. There was one person in the audience.
And he maneuvers him around. He forces him into it, trying to cross the leg. He's going to try to put him in the sharpshooter. He got it. Look at that ring positioning in the middle of the ring.
But he's not giving up. Benoit's not giving up. He can only take so much.
I'll never forget after the match. I walked up to Bret and just hugged him, and I cried for 5 or 10 minutes. We just hugged and cried. I did. It was very difficult, very emotional.
I couldn't have picked a better guy to work with. Somebody that was very close with my brother Owen. Maybe he was almost like a brother to him. Somebody that started out with him, had a lot of memories with him, and was in a lot of ways almost like part of the family.
I miss Owen. And it was truly an honor to be there for him that evening.
I know in particular that my father was really touched by that match. I think Owen would have been really proud. Always one of the most beautiful memories I had.
Okay, you heard the clip from Bret Hart. Very emotional. And I have the date that Owen did pass. It was May 23rd, 1999. And on May 23rd, let me see what day that'll be this year. That will have to be a special Thursday edition. And JJ, I am inviting you to be a part of it, Blackjack as well.
I'll be there, you know, for Owen. You know, at least I could do talk about his career, you know, his highlights. Everything, you know, I'll definitely be there, King.
Thank you. Blackjack.
Sounds good. Count me in.
So there you have it, folks. May 23rd, we will have a special presentation of the late, great Owen Hart. And, you know, the match that they were talking about was he was taking on Chris Benoit on the Nitro there when he came back. You remember that, JJ?
I remember watching WCW, and I was very shocked. It was, you know, it's one of the few times, you know, where you had WWE on or WCW. I watched WCW with my boy Brett, and they were in the very same arena that Owen fell and tragically died in. And Bret asked to wrestle. And not only that, but he wanted to wrestle a fellow Canadian, a graduate of the Hart Dungeon, Chris Benoit. And of all of Bret's, you know, his accomplishments, I got to feel that match really was probably one of the most important matches in Bret Hart's career and just his life. He was wrestling for the memory of his brother. And it was a great match. And unfortunately, I don't think the WWE will ever show that match again. You know, we're fortunate that if you have a copy of Bret Hart's DVD, or if you have a copy of Benoit's DVD, or, you know, you just go on YouTube. Those are the only places you're ever going to see it. No one will ever mention it again, unfortunately. But it was a great moment of WCW to honor another wrestler from another company. And I'll never forget. It was a hell of a match. You know, Bret and Owen went all out. It was just a classic.
Right, right. Yeah, Owen Hart and, Bret Hart, that match was just something special. And only fitting that the Hitman won.
Oh, yeah, he could do a one.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was asking you about how many pay-per-views does the WWE have yearly?
Well, I would say they have 12, but sometimes they might have two pay-per-views in a month, so maybe it might be 13, but I think they try to have at least 12.
So that would be, well, didn't they used to have two a month?
They used to have two a month when they had the separate brands. You know, Raw would have their pay-per-view, SmackDown would have their pay-per-view. But since then, they got rid of that, thank God, because it was getting to a point where it was a waste of money and they didn't have enough talent to actually have great matches. So now they have just the one pay-per-view, and, you know, they have a guy from Raw and SmackDown, they compete, whatever, which is basically what you see on Raw and SmackDown anyway. They don't really keep the brand separate. The only thing that's really separate is the world titles. The WWE title is on Raw, and the world title's on SmackDown. That's about it.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I never really was a big fan of having the two brands split up, Raw and SmackDown. I just thought, you know, they were just trying to make two different organizations. And
yeah.
So, A to Z.
It didn't work, yeah. It was an idea, you know. They tried it out when they had a really full roster. You know, they had a really big roster of, you know, this is probably back in, what, 2003, 2004, or maybe even 2002, and they really had the separate brands, and it was, you know, they had enough talent to where they could get by. But, you know, through the years, guys leave, you know, leaving or whatever, and then they lost ECW. That folded, not folded, that just was just a bad, when they brought it back, and it was just a bad idea. And then it was just back to the two. Then they narrowed it down. Now they're just one. And I'm glad they need to keep it at one.
Yeah. Do you remember the old days when basically you had the Royal Rumble,
mm-hmm.
the WrestleMania,
yep.
SummerSlam, King of the Ring, and Survivor Series, 5 pay-per-views, I think it was.
That's right, the 4 big ones. Those were the ones that they were the most exciting shows of the year. They were the biggest ones. And, you know, it worked. It was a great time. But as the company got bigger, they got more home screen, people were watching, you know, Attitude Era, House, they introduced the In Your House pay-per-view, and, you know, that was a success. And then next thing you know, they're doing these, you know, 3-hour pay-per-views every month.
No. Now the question is, will the TNA doing these less pay-per-views equal more ratings? What's your thought on that, JJ?
You know, like I said, I'm very optimistic with TNA. I want to see them do well. I want to see them succeed. You know, there's a place for them. You know, that's one of the things that was great about the WWE during the Attitude Era was you had WWE, you had WCW, and you had ECW. So let's say, you know, if you were sick of watching Bret Hart when he was in WWE, or if you were sick of watching Hulk Hogan when he was in WWE, and they made the jump to WCW, it was fresh. It was new. Seeing Hogan in the NWO, seeing Bret Hart and Macho Man, or Bret Hart and Booker T, Bret Hart and Goldberg, you had this kind of freshness, and that's something we don't have today. We have a guy where, you know, if you're sick of watching John Cena and Randy Orton, well, that's because you're on Raw. So what do? They'll just put them on SmackDown. But you're still getting the same thing. It's still from the WWE. So you don't have that freshness like you had in the Attitude Era. And I hope that TNA can just stay alive for another, you know, they're celebrating their 11th anniversary this year. I hope they have another 11 years, but the way things are going, you know, their ratings are going down too. You talk about the WWE losing, you know, viewership, TNA's ratings are going down as well. And, you know, that's unfortunate.
Oh, big time.
And I like what they're doing. I like the whole Aces and Eights. I like Bully Ray's the world champion, but for some reason, it's not connecting with a lot of viewers. Maybe they feel that it's just a ripoff of the NWO, and they're sick of it. I don't know. You know, I hope for TNA. I hope TNA's benefiting. You know, they're putting these monthly pay-per-views, and if nobody's buying it, then they're wasting money. So if they're just doing four pay-per-views a year, maybe people will go, well, you know what, they're not on that often. They got a pay-per-view in June. Maybe I'll check it out. It's their anniversary show. Maybe I'll check out Bound for Glory. They say that's their biggest show of the year. Maybe I'll watch that. As opposed to having one every month and they're sick of it or they don't like it, at least now when it's limited, you feel that, okay, I only have these four choices. Which one do I want to see?
No, no question. And I would be more intrigued to order that pay-per-view if you know that there's very limited pay-per-views. Because you know they're going to put more of an effort into that pay-per-view because it's one of only four.
Exactly. You know, they're going to put their best talent in the on the show, and they're going to wrestle their ass off. You know, they're going to put, whether it's the world title, and it's Sting and Jeff Hart, or it's Sting and Bully Ray for the TNA Championship, or you got the X Division title. And like I said, Chris Sabin made his return. You put Sabin in there with, you know, the X Division champion, the tag titles. You need to build on their stars, and they need to really deliver. You know, they're guys like Bad Influence or, you know, Hernandez and Chavo or Bobby Roode and Austin Aries. These guys got to step up.
Oh, yeah. I thought Bobby Roode would be a big-time player at this point. Did you?
Yeah, you know, Bobby Roode's another one of those TNA originals. He's one of those guys who's been there since almost day one. He was a part of Team Canada. He was with Scott D'Amore, Petey Williams. He was with a few of the other guys, and then he broke that whole regime broke up. Then he went with Beer Money. Again, he was in another tag team. They never quite put him in that main event slot yet. So he's there with Beer Money, and you know what? They were a pretty successful tag team. I look at some of the tag teams out of TNA, I'd say Beer Money. They were a hell of a team to watch. They fucked them up, and now finally he's getting a push. He was the longest reigning TNA champion in their history. Bobby Roode was the TNA champion longer than guys like Kurt Angle, Eddie Guerrero, The Undertaker, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Brock Lesnar. You know, Bobby Roode made a name for himself in TNA. Unfortunately, right now, he's out of the title picture, and he's with a tag team with Austin Aries. Austin Aries, another guy who stepped up. He was a TNA champion. He defeated Bobby Roode. So that's actually pretty interesting to me. You got Bobby Roode, the longest reigning TNA champion. He gets defeated by Austin Aries, and now they're a tag team. They were tag team champions.
No question. Do you remember the first world champion in TNA?
Ken Shamrock.
That's right.
Ken Shamrock was the NWA, because they didn't have a TNA title at the time. They were in partnership with the National Wrestling Alliance. Ken Shamrock technically is the first ever TNA NWA world champion.
Go ahead, JJ.
Yeah, that is actually accurate. And the year was 2002.
Right.
So that means we're going on to, 13, 14 years of TNA compared to only 6 years of the ECW. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. I mean, the thing is, I think a lot of people remember the glory days of ECW a little bit more than the glory days of TNA. They're still trying to create the glory days.
Oh, no question. No question. And you remember when TNA tried to have an ECW faction a couple years back?
Oh, yeah. They brought in
I think they called it EV2. They couldn't call
it EV2.
So they came up EV2. It was the second coming of ECW, and Dixie Carter went all out. She gave them their own pay-per-view. She let them, Tommy Dreamer booked the show. Tommy Dreamer got all the old guys back, at least the guys who weren't in contract with WWE. And, you know, they put on a really memorable show. I remember enjoying it. And I don't know if it was a good one-night stand, but it was pretty cool. You know, it was an ECW show. It was under TNA.
Yeah, no question about it. And they had a lot of other good champions early on. Who else was champion there? Do you remember? Who beat Shamrock? Do you remember?
I think it was, believe it or not, R-Truth. Ron Killings.
Wow, you're right.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, R-Truth.
R-Truth.
He got his break with TNA / NWA, or NWA / TNA.
Yeah. Yeah, he was their second world champion.
Oh, no question about it. Yeah, well,
Raven. Raven won the NWA title. In fact,
there you go.
Raven defeated AJ Styles, I think. Rhino. Rhino's another NWA champion. He won. It was a very short period, I remember. I think it was maybe a week or two. But he did win the title, and you know, I was really excited for him. I liked Rhino as the world champion in TNA. Unfortunately, it didn't last too long.
No question about it. Let me play another clip of Owen Hart's one of his themes. Let's surprise you guys with this one. See if you remember this.
Well, enough is enough, and it's time for a change. I tried to be a nice guy. Come and take your best shot. I was a victim.
Okay, JJ, do you remember what that was from?
I think it was around, 98? I don't know if he was in the Nation of Domination.
Of Domination.
Yeah.
Of Domination!
Yeah, in fact, if you listen to that song, it sounds almost similar to The Rock's original theme. That kind of that.
Does. It definitely does. And, of course, it's Owen Hart's birthday today, so we're playing tribute to him. We'll have a much bigger show, of course, coming up on the 23rd of May.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And Blackjack, have you met Owen Hart plenty of times, right?
Definitely. We hung out when he came here in Detroit, him and his brother, and there were times when he came alone, when he was alone here for tapings and stuff like that. Real nice guy.
You met, let's see, you met basically everybody. Have you met Bruno?
Yeah, of course.
And what was that like?
I even worked with him. We used to have the gab line together.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That was in the 80s, right?
Yes.
Wow.
I was with him at the Hall of Fame, and that was one of the greatest times of my life to be with Bruno at that time.
Explain to the younger callers what the gab line was all about when they called up.
Something
what
like here. All they had to do was call up 1-900. At that time, it used to be $2 a minute.
Wow.
Allowed to talk to Bruno.
What year are we talking about?
Say again?
What year are we talking about?
I would think maybe 97. That's what comes off the top of my head.
What year? 97 or 87?
I think 97. It comes off the top of my head.
No, I think Bruno was out of the wrestling. I think you think of maybe 87. Because I remember that. Vaguely, yeah, in the 80s.
I don't think it was the 80s.
Because the 90s was, I'm not even going to dignify
it. 87.
I'm not going to dignify the guy that we worked for.
Oh, there you go. Right, okay.
Yeah, that person who we worked for, I won't dignify by saying his name.
Yeah.
yeah, El Chico. That's
Hell of a time.
Right. And there was a time that I was working in the summer camp about a dozen years ago, and Blackjack got me a front row ticket for Monday Night Raw.
Wow.
And I gave it to Jeff because I was working in a camp. And that night, unfortunately or fortunately, we had an overnight trip to Canada. And I couldn't say, couldn't call in sick. That was, you know, half my paycheck. So I had no choice, and I was happy to give it to Jeff and to this Jay. You could see Jeff with the bagel guys poster. Isn't that right, Blackjack?
Yes, those good memories.
Oh, most definitely good memories. Most definitely. Do you remember, Blackjack, around 3 in the morning, it used to be a wrestling show on AM radio?
WFAN.
Really?
Yeah.
And who was in that?
Rich Mancuso.
Uh-huh.
And Jody McDonald.
And Jody McDonald. You know, Jody's still on the fan.
Is he?
Yes.
Send him my regards.
Okay. Will do. Will do. So that's all the classic days of wrestling, if you will. Do you remember the old...
Before you had to rely on the YouTubes and everything else like that.
Yeah.
Okay,
that was really hardcore information at that time.
Yeah, I got one last great promo. Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Sunny Days is the title. Let's take a look.
That's what we speculated on last week.
Anything can happen here in the World Wrestling Federation. Vince McMahon, pleased to join you for the second hour here on the War Zone, along with JR and Jerry the King Lawler. And yes, the Hitman's Red Heart has come to Mobile, Alabama, and we are live, and Hitman about to spill the beans. What is the big surprise?
Give me my mic!
What do you think, King?
I have no idea, McMahon.
You're not joining the Heart Foundation, are you?
No, not it.
I didn't think so. All right, here we go.
No wheelchair this week.
Do me a big favor and please just shut up. You know, it's not too much to ask for. Americans are full of this freedom of speech and freedom of expression. Well, last week, the great American hero, Shawn Michaels, he wouldn't even allow me my right to free speech. To me, it's just typical that all you rednecks here and all the rest of the Americans, scum coast to coast, y'all speak with a forked tongue because I have a right to free speech. Isn't that true? Last week, your great American hero proved that he's no better than so-called Steve Austin. That he's got to take it upon himself to beat up on an invalid, a person that can't even defend himself. But I guess that's what makes him an American hero. Shawn Michaels, frankly, I could give a damn who you pick for a partner next week. I could care less. I don't know too many guys that even want to be aligned with you, because your days are numbered. But I'm going to cut right to the chase. Everybody wants to know, everybody around the world, my true fans around the world, and you scum in particular who hang on every single word that I have, you all want to know what my big surprise is. Shawn Michaels, the boy toy. He's announced that he's finally recovered from this knee injury. And he's going to heroically come back at the King of the Ring. How quaint. Shawn Michaels, there's somebody else. There's a real hero. And a real man that's going to come back at the King of the Ring with a bad knee. And that real man and that real hero is me. Whoa!
That's ambition.
Against everybody's heartfelt, kind, gracious consideration, the Heart Foundation, Brian Pillman, my family, and all the millions of cards and letters that I get from the rest of the world, they're all concerned about me coming back with a bad knee. Shawn Michaels, I want to issue you a challenge, an offer that you can't refuse. I want to challenge you to a match at the King of the Ring. And if I can't beat you in less than 10 minutes, I promise that I will never, ever wrestle in the United States of America again.
What? Never wrestle in the United States again?
10 minutes.
Now, just before anybody gets their hopes up too high.
You know something?
Hey.
You talk about this freedom of speech thing. Last week you had all the freedom in the world. You talked so much, we went off air listening to you babble. But now let's get to the match. Let's get to the challenge. Brett, last WrestleMania, you couldn't beat me in 60 minutes. What in the world makes you think that you can beat me in 10 minutes? Oh, wait. I know what it is. It's that gang you got around you, you see. That's what it is. Because I know mano a mano, you wouldn't have a chance. But you know something, Brett? I want all your boys down there. I want your whole crew down there, Brett.
They'll be down there.
Oh, will they? Do I have that promise from you? Do I have that promise from you? They'll all be there?
Where I go, the Hart Foundation goes.
All righty. Well, I've got one little stipulation. Each one of your men must be handcuffed to a ring post.
Wait a minute.
That way, you hit man and I can settle this thing once and for all. None of your goons jumping in. None of your excuses that we have heard for over a year. We are going to find out once and for all if Brett the Hitman Hart can get beat like a man. Because Brett, believe me, you couldn't go 10 minutes in any situation, if you know what I mean.
Oh, boy.
And,
listen here,
even
Shawn
though,
Michaels.
Even though lately you've had some sunny days, my friend, you still can't get the job done. The Heartbreak Kid coming off a knee injury, you coming off a knee injury, they're all handcuffed. Hitman, I'm going to knock you down and drag you out.
Okay, so you're on.
What?
I accept. You accept. We'll put the Hart Foundation. You can handcuff them to whatever corner you want.
What?
And I got a chance. 10 minutes is all I need to smoke you, Shawn Michaels, or I'll never set foot in the United States of America with my wrestling boots again.
Bret
Whoa!
Hart,
unbelievable!
Hart, you can, Bret Hart, you can smoke me all you want. What you've got to do is beat me, which you cannot do. Bret, you, my friend, do not have a snowball's chance in hell of beating the Heartbreak Kid. Believe me when I tell you.
Ah, about it, the Hitman Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels at the King of the Ring. And the Hart Foundation handcuffed to the ring post? What's that all about? What is Bret thinking? Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Unbelievable error. JJ, your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, we mentioned before Bret Hart and the whole anti-America. I know he's probably, he's always been regarded as a wrestling hero. And even, you know, during that time when he was anti-America, the fans, you know, they still remember him as being one of the greatest wrestlers that ever lived. Look at WWE, they had their 50 greatest WWE championship matches. Number 50 was Bret and Shawn at the 97 Survivor Series. Number one was Bret and Shawn, WrestleMania 12, the Iron Man match. I mean, anytime you put those two in the ring, you got a five-star match. You got one of the greatest wrestlers of all time and one of the greatest performers
of all time. I mean, it was just, it was always a great feeling. They had that relationship with each other where, you know, it was just this raw energy. And especially that time in 97 when Brett was the heel, you know, I remember Sean putting the Canadian flag to his nose. You know, I remember, you know, Brett and you know,
yeah,
all they did. You know, they got some really great stuff then, man. And I don't know if there's ever been a rivalry as heated or was as real as the rivalry they had.
Right. Blackjack, your take.
My sentiments go along with JJ. I agree.
What passion when you hear Brett and Shawn Michaels talk, I'll tell you. You don't
get
that passion, you know? Like, Brett really giving it his all.
Oh, yeah. But, especially then, Brett was really frustrated. He was really frustrated with his position in the company. The fans, you know, they weren't interested in the wrestling hero anymore. They loved the degenerate. They loved, you know, the Texas Rattlesnake. They loved the guys who you wouldn't normally think would be the good guy. And he felt lost in the shuffle. So he was legitimately fired up. He was fired up, and he was pissed off. In fact, you know, you can go on YouTube and look for Bret Hart snaps. There's a video where Bret Hart cut a shoot interview on Monday Night Raw, I believe. And he was just fed up with Vince McMahon. He was fed up with the company. He said things that Stone Steve Austin ever did. Bret actually pushed it further than any wrestler ever did.
Wow, that's good stuff. Bret Hart, definitely one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Where, I don't know. That's for everybody to decide. But nevertheless, so we got the Extreme Rules coming up this month, right?
That's right. We got four matches definitely are going to happen that they announced, I believe, yesterday. We got Brock Lesnar and Triple H in an old-school cage match. We have It should be very interesting because, you know, Brock Lesnar obviously made a career in the UFC. So he's familiar with being in a cage. So it should be a nice, you know, brutal fight.
Yeah, who's your prediction, early prediction on that one?
My early prediction, I got to go with Lesnar. Lesnar needs to prove that he is a beast. He needs to go out there and be the most dominant heel that the WWE has ever seen. Because right now, I don't believe it's Ryback. I don't believe in Ryback. I do believe in Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar can go out there, be a beast, be an animal, and I believe it. And he can back it up because he doesn't have to say a single word. He's got Paul Heyman to do that for him.
No, absolutely. Heyman, perfect manager for Brock Lesnar. You agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's nobody better. Like I said, you know, Ryback, his biggest fault is that he I don't really believe him when he speaks. When he was a face, he didn't have to say much because the fans spoke for him. The fans would chant, "Feed me more." You know, they could speak for him where he didn't say too much. He just had to look like a mean bastard and he was going to kick your ass and that's it. But now that he's a heel and he's got to put himself over, he's got to come out looking dominant. He's got to go out there and go head-to-head with Cena or whoever, and he's just not doing it. It's just, I don't believe it. It's like he's reading off a teleprompter.
No question. And as far as Extreme Rules, any other matches?
Yeah, we have the World Heavyweight Championship. Dolph Ziggler will be defending his title in a triple threat match against Jack Swagger and Alberto Del Rio. What's very interesting about this match is all three men have won ladder matches. They're all Money in the Bank winners. So it's hard to say who this match favors. They've all won Money in the Bank ladder matches. So to put Ziggler, Swagger, and Del Rio in a ladder match, it's anyone's ballgame. Plus, Dolph Ziggler has lost. Dolph Ziggler's the world champion, and yet he had a clean loss to Jack Swagger. Jack Swagger beat Dolph Ziggler. He beat the world champion in a non-title match. Alberto Del Rio, another guy, he beat Dolph Ziggler, the world champion, in a non-title match. Ziggler has been a vulnerable champion.
Give me your opinion, JJ, on Dolph Ziggler, how they brought him up, and where he is now.
The funny thing about Dolph Ziggler is this isn't his first time in the WWE. A lot of people probably remember the Spirit Squad, and I think his name was, I don't know, Nikki. He had a bunch of guys, you know, the
right.
Spirit Squad, the cheerleaders. So that was really his first time in the WWE. You know, it was kind of that sort of gimmick. It didn't last too long, and then he went back into development. And then they brought him up as Dolph Ziggler. And that was the best thing that ever happened for him. He died. He bleached his hair. He has a new persona. And he's really delivered on his own. You know, I look at him and I think maybe he's a modern-day Shawn Michaels. He's a hell of a performer. And he has the wrestling credentials. He's an amateur wrestler. He's highly decorated. But he's a show-off. He really is a show-off. He really fits that title. Because he goes out there and he makes himself look good. And he makes other people look good. He'll do whatever it takes. He'll flop around the ring like a fish out of water. He'll do whatever it takes to make that look good. I think it's really come a long way. And I think when he cashed in Money in the Bank and he won the world title, it was something that every fan wanted to see. A lot of fans were disappointed by WrestleMania just because he didn't cash in Money in the Bank. You watch Del Rio and Swagger on the WrestleMania DVD or whatever, fans were chanting for Ziggler. He wasn't even on the mat. He didn't even interfere, but the fans wanted Ziggler. And they didn't get him. But they did get him the next night on Raw, and they blew the roof off the joint. It was one of Dolph's greatest moments, and it was one of the moments for Raw. It was an explosive moment. The fans went crazy. He won the world title. It was a great moment for Ziggler. And right, like I said, he's kind of the vulnerable champion. The Rio Swagger, they both had clean wins over him. He could lose the belt at Extreme Rules, but I don't see it happening. I predict Dolph Ziggler will find a way to escape as the world champion still.
Is Vicky Guerrero still around?
Vicky Guerrero is the general manager for Raw. But right now, Dolph Ziggler has AJ Lee. AJ Lee is sort of his, you know, on-screen girlfriend. And he has Big E, Kingston is one of his, like, bodyguards.
Wow. And any other matches for Extreme Rules?
Well, we have the uncertain WWE Championship match with a injured John Cena versus Ryback. They just announced yesterday on Raw that their match will be a last man standing match, which is definitely a disadvantage of Cena, which if he really does have a torn Achilles tendon, you know, he's already on one foot as it is. So you put him in a last man standing match, then the advantage goes to Ryback.
Oh, no question. Any other matches?
Well, there's two matches that may or may not happen, and one that I believe will happen is Mark Henry versus Sheamus, and they might have some type of bull rope or a strap match.
Oh, wow.
Another match we might see, but it isn't official yet, is Randy Orton versus The Big Show. And the match isn't official yet, but they've been building up to a feud between these two guys since WrestleMania. It seems like they want to have a match at Extreme Rules.
No question about it. And that would be WWE Extreme Rules. What pay-per-view follows that? No?
The pay-per-view after Extreme Rules should be that pay-per-view in Chicago, WWE Payback. It is the first pay-per-view titled Payback.
Oh, okay. So we'll have to tune into that. There is a WrestleMania 29 DVD available next week. So be on the lookout for that.
I would definitely want to see the Hall of Fame. I mean, if anything, because they only showed, you know, some highlights of it on the television. But to watch it in its entirety, that would be awesome.
Right. And Jake the Snake just got an award for the Cauliflower Alley Club. Blackjack, you familiar with that?
Yeah, he was expected to get that, and I would think sometime next year, look for him to receive another one.
Oh, you get more than one with these?
Yeah, from someone from another promotion.
Oh. Oh, wow. Yeah, so like you said, JJ.
I don't think he's been inducted to the WWE yet, right?
No, and he should be. He was a big
part. Yeah, so it might be him next year, along with Paul Bearer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how about Owen Hart? Let's get a campaign for that.
I think it could happen because, as we know, Martha Hart, the widow, Owen Hart, she finally came to an agreement with.
Oh, she did, huh?
Over the
use. Oh, that was the whole thing stopping it. So, if that's correct, then there should be no reason at all. But thanks again for this extended edition of King George Radio with 7WE at TNA Talk with JJ and Blackjack. JJ, thank you so much for joining us as well as Blackjack. And we'll be back Monday night, 7 p.m. right before Raw next week.
You got any other shows going down on the line, King?
Nothing that I have booked yet, but they can always go to King George Radio and press the like button on Facebook.
Like you're new with the circuit here. Everybody's talking about King Jordan and HLN.
Awesome.
Well, that'll be the day.
What's going on with that?
Blackjack does get the news before anybody else does. That's
right.
One thing. Okay, I'm going to leave you everybody with the Owen Hart theme that I played earlier. Guys, thanks a million for joining us on King Jordan Radio.
Blackjack.
Okay.
Well, thank
enough
you,
guys. Yeah. Is enough, and it's time for a change. I tried to be a nice guy. Come and take the best shot. Come on.